Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard. This is another live edition of Wall Street Unspun, the midweek market update. It's Peter Schiff, but it's Wednesday, July 13th. And you know, I looked at our archives of the website at www.europass.net, and I noticed that the first program of this broadcast was in late July. So I think in two more episodes, we will officially be at our one-year anniversary. I would have been doing this broadcast for an entire year, and the time has really flown by. I mean, it was hard for me to believe I've been doing this show for a year. But in any event, if anybody has just started listening to the broadcast recently, either on shortwave or on my website, all the programs that I've done, every single weekly program I've done for almost a year, is available online on my website at www.europac.net. People can go back and listen to what I've been saying and listen at their own leisure. Now again, you know, the title of this program is Wall Street Unspun, and the reason for that title is because I think most people, when they get the news, they don't get a real unbiased assessment of the news. What they get is propaganda. They get spin, and the whole idea is for me to unspin it, to give you the straight scoop on what's really going on in the U.S. economy, and what's really going on with the economic data, or what it really means. One particular example would be the trade deficit, which was reported today. And also, we had the jobs data on Friday. So we had two big economic releases since our last show, and I want to spend a good deal of the program today really talking about these economic numbers, both the jobs numbers and the trade numbers, and what they mean, because Wall Street and the financial media in general put positive spins on both of these economic releases. And also, we had some Federal Reserve officials, but Ben Bernanke, who used to be on the Federal Reserve and who now chairs the Council of Economic Advisors. Now, if ever there was a waste of taxpayer money, it's the Council of Economic Advisors. I mean, look at the mess that this country is in economically. Look at our current account, our trade deficit, our lack of savings, yet we have a whole council of economic advisors. I mean, can't these guys give some advice about how bad these problems are? I mean, what a waste. I mean, we couldn't have gotten ourselves into a worse mess if we tried. I mean, what's the point of having economic advisors? At least we can fire everybody there and save some money. What their job is really to do, and Ben Bernanke proved that this week, is simply propaganda. That's what they're trying to do. I mean, they don't really give any economic advice to the administration as to, you know, what would help improve the economy. I mean, because that advice would basically be, you know, butt out, cut regulations and cut taxes. But, you know, government doesn't want to hear that. But what the Council of Economic Advisors is really all about is spreading propaganda, helping to confuse the American public as to the extent of economic damage that government is doing to the economy. But in any event, so we got Bernanke's speech, and we're going to talk about these numbers. And I want to give out the telephone number again. Remember, this is a call-in show, and I really welcome your feedback, your questions, your comments. Certainly love to hear from clients. The telephone number is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. 97. So the lines are open. Call. You know, one of my clients actually I talked to during the week, and he had asked me a question and wondered if I can answer it on the air, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But I would definitely prefer, if any of you have questions, that you would like answered on the air, give me a call. I mean, if you can, on Ask Him Live. And again, it's 888-678-9597. It's a toll-free call, and the lines are open. But anyway, the question that my client had to do with China and my assessment of the fact that how well the Chinese economy would ultimately do when they allow the dollar to collapse. And his question was this, was that the Chinese right now are basically, you know, relatively poor, and they cannot afford to buy all the products that they're producing. And therefore, they're going to be in some sort of trouble when the dollar collapses and we can't afford to buy their products, so they'll be stuck. Well, I mean, the reality is the only reason that the Chinese can't afford to buy their products right now is because their government is suppressing their purchasing power. You see, it's producing the products that creates wealth. See, the Chinese really are actually quite wealthy. Their government is just suppressing that wealth. It's Americans who are poor. We're the ones who really can't afford those products because we don't produce them ourselves, nor do we produce goods or services that we could trade and to exchange to acquire them. See, what's going to happen is when the dollar collapses and the Chinese currency rises in value, all of a sudden, the Chinese, by definition, are richer. Their currency is more valuable. I mean, a good way to look at it is, let's say there's a refrigerator that is made in a factory in China, and the average an American can afford to pay $500 for that refrigerator, and someone in China can only afford to pay $100. I mean, just, you know, well, obviously the person in China is not going to get it. He's going to stick his $100 in the bank because he can't afford to do anything with it, and the refrigerator is going to go to the American. Now, what would happen if the Chinese currency increased tenfold against the dollar? Now, all of a sudden, if the American is bidding $500, now the person in China is bidding $1,000, right? Because his currency is 10 times as valuable as it was. Well, all of a sudden, he can afford to pay twice as much as the American. Well, now the refrigerator stays in China, and the American is stuck holding money, but no product. See, this is what's going to change. It's that what really determines your wealth or your purchasing power is your productivity. The reason that the Chinese can afford products is because Chinese produce products. The reason we can't, Americans, we can't afford products is we don't produce them. But artificially right now, Chinese purchasing power is being artificially siphoned from the Chinese citizens and given directly to Americans by actions of foreign central banks and currency speculators around the world. This is what's going to change. This is what's going to stop. And when it does, the purchasing power will be rightfully returned to who really deserves it, the people who are producing, people in China. And Americans are going to be stuck with a bunch of money, dollars, but with very little to buy with them. Anyway, we've got our first caller on the line. We've got Steve from Rochester, New York. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Good.
Okay. A couple of questions I got for you. Number one, regarding productivity. The other day, actually, I looked to buy an air conditioner. Couldn't find one made in the United States. But when I went to Walmart and saw that the GE air conditioners were made by the Chinese, made in China, I thought to myself, well, this is still an American company. General Electric's an American company. And why is it that it's still American productivity? Is it not, since it's an American company, even though they're making the stuff in China?
No, not really. I mean, it's good that we own the company. I mean, it certainly you know, means that there's any profits, ultimately. But there's a lot of, in the manufacturing process, there are a lot of components that went along the way. There's labor, and there's, you know, and those wages were paid to people in China. There was rent on the factories. There were taxes that were paid in the prolonged production paid into China. These are revenue streams that could have been here in America, but instead they went to enrich the Chinese.
But these are all still great American companies that are producing the products in China because right now it's the cheapest place to do it. And
well, yeah, I mean, they used to produce their products in America because we were the cheapest place to produce.
Yeah, which
that's a problem that we're not the cheapest, and it's not simply a function of low labor. What makes China such a great place to do business is lack of government intervention. It's low taxes and low regulations. That's what makes China so attractive. I mean, it's amazing that communist China has more free enterprise, than more limited government than the United States. That's why people are producing there. But you see, the problem is with all the wealth that the Chinese are accumulating and all the productivity and all the factories and all the know-how, that while General Electric is still an American company manufacturing, although most of General Electric's revenues do not come from manufacturing, it's a finance company.
Yeah.
Most of General Revenue's revenue come from loaning money. But more and more of these companies are being owned by the Chinese and, in fact, are going to be bought by the Chinese. I wrote an article about that on my website. Our current account deficit is roughly $800 billion a year right now, almost $1 trillion a year. That is the equivalent of 50% of the market cap of the Dow Jones. If 15 Dow Jones companies equals 1 year of our current account deficit. So more and more of these companies are going to be transferred into foreign hands completely as a result of all the money that we're borrowing every year to consume.
Now, why doesn't the New Zealand current account deficit, which runs at 7% of their GDP, bother you as much as our current account deficit?
Yeah, well, number one, there's a couple of reasons. I've been investing in New Zealand for many, many years. And many of the countries that I do invest in have current account surpluses, particularly out of Asia. A country like New Zealand and Australia are a little bit unique, and the reason that I've been willing to invest in those countries, despite that, I mean, New Zealand, one of several of the things I like about New Zealand, but part of it is the way they calculate that current account deficit. It's a little bit different the way we calculate ours, and it's a little bit complicated getting over the air. But it's not really as bad as the numbers reflect. But one of the things that I thought would ultimately turn that situation around is I believe that the natural resources and a lot of the assets that are in New Zealand are artificially low right now because of the underinvestment in raw materials and natural resources. I think that with a boom in the value of what they have to sell to the world, I think their current account situation is going to turn around. And, so I see light at the end of the tunnel. In the meantime, I see an independent central bank. I see a government in New Zealand that has done tremendous free market reforms relative to where they were in the 1970s and 1980s. They got rid of a double taxation on corporate dividends completely. Basically, all corporate income is tax-free in New Zealand. They have no capital gains tax, and they have zero inheritance tax. They don't have a Social Security or payroll tax the way we do. They have an income tax, but there's no local income taxes. So the highest tax rate that anyone pays in New Zealand on their income tax is 39%. That's maximum, whereas, we pay 50-55%, here in California or New York. Also, their budget, their government, for the last 10 years has been running rather significant, honest surpluses, and they have been paying off their national debt. So, I see a lot of positives going on in the New Zealand economy that I don't see in the U.S. economy, and I see the New Zealand current account turning around. I don't see the U.S. current account deficit getting smaller. I see it getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
But the New Zealand current account has gone up during the middle of a commodity boom. And if you're saying, if your argument's true that they're mainly a commodity play and a commodity...
They're not. I mean, the New Zealand economy, if you look at it, their manufacturing is more than twice as large a percentage of the New Zealand economy as it is in the American economy. So, they're much more of a manufacturing economy even than the United States, which is, hardly manufactures anything.
One more question for you. Something that I'm hoping, I know you're going to be able to explain. When they say the Fed wants to inflate our way out of debt, and I've heard you say that also, could you explain what does that exactly mean? I mean,
well, basically what happens is there's monetary policy can either be, if you're going to pursue monetary policy, you can either do it for the benefit of debtors or you can do it for the benefit of creditors. Creditors, people who have lent money, they have an interest in sound money because they want to get repaid with money that is at least as valuable as the money that they lent. Debtors, on the other hand, want cheap money. They want to be able to repay their debts with money of diminished value. So whenever you have paper money and you have, you know, and you have a democracy and these constituencies are battling, you have two diametrically opposed interests. You have the interest of the saver, lender, and the interest of the borrower, debtor. Now, the United States is populated overwhelmingly by debtors. The vast majority of Americans who go to the polls have no savings. What they have is liabilities. They have a home mortgage. They have a car loan, they have a student loan, they have credit card debt. What they want is inflation. What savers want, what clients of Euro Pacific Capital want, is no inflation. My clients have financial assets. My clients have stocks and bonds, and they're living on dividends and interest. And, you know, they want sound money. Unfortunately, they're not going to get it in the United States because American politicians are not going to follow the interest of savers, especially since most of the savers are citizens of other countries. They can't even vote because so much of our debt is held abroad. So the U.S. government is going to pursue policies to help out debtors, and just so happens the biggest debtor of them all, the largest debtor on planet Earth, is the U.S. government. So the U.S. government has a tremendous vested interest in inflation for itself, because the U.S. government cannot possibly repay its debts. It can only repudiate them. And in fact, I talked last week about the fact that in America, we've gotten away from the concept of ever repaying debt. I mean, Americans think that we can continuously expand our debt forever. I mean, a perfect example is these interest-only mortgages, where people think they can borrow money to buy a house, but never repay a nickel of what they borrowed. And I think what this is laying the groundwork towards either default or inflation or hyperinflation to eliminate this debt, because you cannot pile debt up forever. But what people have to understand is the people who get screwed in that scenario are not the borrowers, but the lenders, the savers, anybody that has their savings in U.S. currency. So you want to get rid of your U.S. currency. You want to have your savings denominated in other currencies around the world, in a good basket of currencies that are far less likely to be inflated into oblivion. And I think this financial disaster, Armageddon, whatever you want to call it, is something that's going to happen relatively soon. I don't think this is something far off into the distance.
But when someone sells shares of, say you invest for one of your clients overseas, and when they sell their stock, aren't they selling it into U.S. dollars?
Well, they're actually selling it in that currency, and they can keep it in that currency if they want.
Okay.
They can convert it back to dollars, but we don't buy these stocks to sell them. We buy them to own them. The return that we're getting is our dividends. See, if we're getting an 8%, let's say, dividend yield on an investment in New Zealand that you're talking about, we're getting dividends every quarter or semi-annually in New Zealand dollars. We don't have to sell the asset. We just leave it there. You know, now, at some point in the future, when we think the coast is clear, when we think the dollar has fallen as far as it's going to go, maybe we'll bring it back to dollars. But we never have to. We could actually sell a New Zealand stock and have New Zealand currency deposited into our account and let it sit there until we figure out what we want to do with it. But we're trying to buy very conservative assets. We're not trying to, you know, buy stocks that we need to buy and sell and trade. We're looking for income. We're looking for preservation of principal and purchasing power. And, you know, so we're buying very solid, transparent, you know, plain vanilla, you know, widows and orphans type investments. At least, you know, that's what the bulk of my clients are doing. I have clients, too, that wish to speculate. And so for those clients, we look for things that, you know, are riskier. I had a conversation with a client today, and he was asking me what I do with my own money. And the difference, I said, between my clients and myself is I'm still at the stage where I want to get rich or get richer. Most of my clients don't want to get poor, so I'm helping them preserve their wealth. But because I'm trying to be a little bit more aggressive with my own money, I have quite a bit of my own money in gold mining stocks. I have a lot of foreign stocks that pay dividends like my clients, but I have a much higher percentage in gold mining because I'm buying gold mining stocks because I think I can get rich with them. But I'm buying my clients conservative foreign ideas because I think that's what they need so they don't become poor. See, if you already have wealth, you need to preserve it.
Sure.
You know, if you're I'm 42 years old, I'm still in the wealth accumulation stage. So I think I can make a pretty good buck off of this debacle, because I think gold has been undervalued by a long stretch for a long time. And I think that when the world looks around and realizes that they don't have any money, that they just got a bunch of paper that's being printed into oblivion, there's going to be a mad rush around the world to accumulate real money, which is gold, and these mining shares are going to go through the roof. If I'm right. Now, if I'm wrong, you know, that doesn't happen, which is another reason that we recommend these conservative foreign stocks, because the beauty of this strategy is even if I'm wrong, even if there is no disaster, you still got a good portfolio that should outperform. You know, the U.S. dollar should fall. I mean, if you look at the macroeconomics, we have a lower savings rate than the world. We consume too much. We have budget and trade deficits. The dollar has been in decline for 40 years. There's no reason to think that that's going to change. Sure, there can be periods of years where the dollar is strengthening. But if you're a long-term investor and you put your money in sound foreign assets with a good yield, there's every reason to believe that you're going to outperform any comparable portfolio of domestic securities, even if nothing bad ever happens. That's why I really like this strategy, because if I'm wrong and everything is fine, we're still better off. And if I'm right, I mean, it's a huge difference. But anyway, really, Steve, are you a client of ours yet?
Not yet.
All right. Well, what's holding you back?
Well, I'm actually stuck in some options right now, waiting for the market to sell off, and I'm certainly planning on becoming a client. But right now,
you've got like puts on the market?
Yeah, I got some puts on some tech stocks, and right now.
Yeah, the reason that I don't really recommend puts or shorting the market, even though I'm bearish, is because if the market goes down, the most you're going to do is you're going to get paid dollars. I mean, let's say you're short a stock and the stock goes to zero.
Yes.
You double your money. Well, I think if you double the number of dollars you have, you're still going to be behind. I think rather than being short U.S. assets, you want to be long foreign assets. That's the best way to go.
But don't you think that before this whole thing crashes, that the market will at least sell off and there will be an opportunity?
But it might not sell off enough to compensate for the falling dollar.
Right.
Anyway, I'd rather be short than long. But anyway, thank you for the call. And I want to take a quick break and play a commercial for all the listeners out there how to get a hold of us about Euro Pacific Capital. And we'll pick up and talk about the economic numbers and Bernanke's speech at the other end of the break. And thanks for the call, Steve.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back. And again, that number to call, and there are brokers in the office, I think, in California now, at 800-727-7922. 800-727-7922. Hello. Anyway, I just had a little technical difficulty. I wasn't sure if we were still on the line. Anyway, let me give you the number to call. Okay, we're good. Number to call the show, again, the lines are open. The number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Now, last week, we got another employment number. And again, the number of jobs that were produced were far fewer than the number that they were anticipating. I think they were looking for like 190,000 new jobs, and we only created 145,000 new jobs. But, you know, interestingly enough, I was watching CNBC, and Larry Kudlow was the host, as he normally is when the jobs numbers came out. And as soon as he saw this number, he was saying how great it was. Which is so ridiculous because, you know, I mean, if the number, he was saying that how it showed that we're creating just enough jobs to create jobs, but not too many for inflation. He said it was perfect. It was Goldilocks. No, it was 50,000 below what he thought. Now, if this number had come out at 250,000 jobs, you would have been talking about how great that was, that it was, oh, my gosh, look at this great U.S. economy. We're producing all these jobs. I mean, no matter what that number came out, Larry Kudlow was going to talk about how great it was. Now, actually, to give him credit, the host of the show actually, you know, Mark Haynes actually, you know, questioned him about that, kind of called him on it and said, you know, I mean, but then he didn't follow up and he let him off the hook. But, I mean, it was just so ridiculous that they were trying to spin this thing. But there's a couple of interesting things about the numbers that came out. First of all, we lost another 24,000 manufacturing jobs. That's a tremendous number of manufacturing jobs to lose in 1 month. And, of course, we lose manufacturing jobs every month. So 24,000 people lost their jobs making stuff. Now, if 145,000 Americans got jobs, but 24,000 fewer Americans are producing stuff for those Americans to buy, what does that mean? Well, that means the trade deficit is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Because these new Americans who are collecting paychecks, they have purchasing power. They're going to want to buy stuff. Well, they're going to have to buy stuff that somebody is making in some other country because we're not making it in America. So I think that number, the jobs number that we got, is not a good sign. It's another sign of how imbalanced our economy is. We're 24,000 productive Americans who were employed producing things lost their jobs, and another 145,000 got jobs in the service sector or working for government, pushing paper, arranging loans, but in any way not producing stuff and further exacerbating our imbalances. What America needs is more production. We need to produce more stuff. You know, not less, and the jobs report that we got on Friday shows that we're continuing down the wrong path. Now, number two is, you know, there's something called, I've mentioned this before in on my show, the birth-death assumption. And every time the U.S. government reports the job statistics, they have a section or whatever they want to call it, an entry for birth-death. And what it is the birth and death of new companies. Every month, the government assumes that a certain number of businesses shut their doors and a certain number of businesses started up. And the government also assumes that there's a net change in employment as a result in the birth or death of new businesses. Well, last month, the government assumed that enough new businesses were created that it attributed about 160,000 new jobs to these new businesses that the government assumes came into existence. Now, the government has no proof that they came into existence, and they have, and even if they did come into existence, they have no idea how many people they hired. I mean, what if the government's birth-death model is wrong? What if instead of new businesses coming into existence, what if we lost businesses? I mean, what if that number isn't 160,000? What if it's a negative? I mean, basically, the number of jobs that they made up equal more than the number of jobs that they say we created. So if the government had not assumed that there were any new businesses, if the government just assumed it was flat, instead of us producing 145,000 jobs, we would have lost 15,000 jobs. So how could you even believe these numbers when the government can just say that we're going to estimate 160,000 jobs came into existence, that we have no idea whether they're there or not, but we're just going to assume that they're there because we're going to assume that these new businesses got started? Well, I mean that's a tough jump for me to accept that the government is going to even have the ability to figure this out. And when you give the government the ability to just arbitrarily make up a number, obviously they've got an incentive to make that number bigger, like the government always does. And anything that's supposed to be good, like economic growth or productivity or jobs, the government is going to have a way, have an interest in making that number look better. And any numbers that are supposed to be bad, like inflation or unemployment, you know, the government's going to find a way to make those statistics appear lower because, of course, it's in their national interest. They want to convince the public, the voters, the people around the world who are lending them money that everything is great. And if they have to tweak the numbers a little bit to create the illusion that everything is great, well, so be it. That's what they do. Anyway, we've got another call on the line. Now we've got Bob from Great Neck. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Good.
Tomorrow, and we're going to have these phony CPI and PPI numbers, which allegedly measure inflation. And what is very difficult to understand is that in a normal world, if inflation is going up, you would think that that would be incredibly bullish for gold. But unfortunately, what keeps happening is that people assume if inflation is rising, therefore interest rates will continue to rise, and therefore they believe that strengthens the dollar when in fact it's weakening the purchasing power of the dollar. But meanwhile, the gold stocks get hammered.
Well, I've heard this in the past, and the reason that it's an apparent paradox when numbers about when inflation numbers look a little worse that the dollar would strengthen is because is still convinced that the Fed is this vigilant anti-inflation fighting machine that is going to strike at the first sign of inflation. And the Fed just wants to keep that fear out there, but that's not going to happen. The Fed is the biggest champion of inflation, the biggest creator of inflation. Inflation is a deliberate policy of the government, but of course they can't let anybody know that. So, you know, right now it's ironic that the world can't see this. And I've mentioned, too, about gold that, yes, you know, since so many people naively believe that inflation is contained, gold. Meanwhile, inflation is causing the cost of mining gold to rise so rapidly that these gold miners are having their profits eroded by inflation. But since nobody believes there's any inflation, the value of what they're mining hasn't been rising. But the cost of mining it certainly has. So it's very ironic that the biggest victims of inflation are gold stocks. But anyway, I keep buying them because I think that they're an incredible bargain.
You think there'll be a time when this paradox disappears and people wise up and realize that inflation, in fact...
The old saying is, you know, you fool all the people some of the time and some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. It's going to end, you know, and this whole obsession on the core CPI, you know, I wanted to talk about Bernanke's in his speech, but one of the things that Bernanke said was that core inflation will be well contained. You know, it's very ironic how everybody now talks about core inflation as if that's inflation. I mean, what Bernanke is saying and all the members of the Fed are saying is, we don't care what is actually happening to the CPI. We don't care how expensive food is. We don't care how expensive energy is. We don't care how expensive housing is. All we care about is this core CPI, whatever that is. And as long as that's not going up, then we're going to claim that there's no inflation. Because they don't even bother to say that inflation is contained. They preface it by saying the core inflation is contained. Well, so what? I mean, who cares? I mean, if your cost of living is going up by 10 or 20% a year, but the government can say, yeah, but if you just take a look at a certain element of it, it's only going up by 2% a year, that's supposed to make you feel better?
Well, it's okay if you don't eat and you don't drive.
You don't heat your house, and then of course, and you don't want to buy a house because housing prices are part of that. There's so much stuff that's not in there, and then of course the core CPI, you can't even buy the core CPI because the government hedonically adjusts it. I mean, it's the prices might actually be going up, but the government says, well, they didn't go up because the government adjusts it for what they believe to be improvements in quality and things like that. So it's all a big scam that's being perpetuated on the world, and I'm trying to ring a bell here and wake people up to the reality of what's going on, and in time for them to actually take action to protect their wealth.
You're an economic Paul Revere.
Right, I'm just riding around telling you that the Americans are coming. you got to do something. You know, you got to get up, and you got to protect yourself. I mean, fortunately, I'm not asking you to take arms and fight off the British. I'm just asking you to get your money out of the dollar. You know, so you know, you're not like putting yourself in harm's way here. It's a very easy thing to do, and it's we're just protecting our wealth, and we can do it by getting out of the dollar, before it's too late. And people have a natural tendency to procrastinate this. And believe me, this is not something that you want to procrastinate because, as I said before, you can either do it too early or too late, and too late is no good. And I don't know when this thing's going to go. I mean, every night I go to sleep, I wake up and I check, what happened overnight because I have a feeling that when it does fall apart, it's going to be while we're all sleeping because it's going to happen in Asia. It's the Asians who are going to wake up one morning and they're going to start selling and the Americans are going to go broke in their sleep.
The problem is most Americans are sleeping even when they're awake.
Well, that's true. Anyway, look, Bob, thanks for the call, and I know you've called the show before, and so keep on listening, and appreciate your business.
You do a great job.
Yeah, anyway, again, the number again to call the show is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. 97. So we've got the jobs numbers that came out on Friday, we talked about. The big number that came out today was the trade deficit. Now, over the weekend, the dollar on Sunday night over in Asia, the dollar came under some pretty big pressure. And between basically Monday and Tuesday, the dollar dropped slightly, about 3% decline in 2 days across the board. Very, very sharp drop in the dollar. It hit a new one-month low against the euro. And I think the reason for the big drop in the dollar was that everybody was bracing themselves for the trade deficit to come out on Wednesday, afraid that it might be some horrific new record deficit. Instead, the trade deficit narrowed to $55.1 billion from $656. And the dollar rallied and gained back about half of what it lost on the prior 2 days, as a result of the fact that the trade deficit wasn't worse than it was. And of course, you know, the fact that they're reacting to it at all, I think, is important. I think the fact that, you know, the dollar got clobbered and then rallied so much around the anticipation and the realization of the trade numbers, to me, shows that the fundamentals potentially are coming back into the picture. And that's bad for the dollar. The minute anybody starts focusing on the fundamentals, the dollar loses. You know, for the past month or so, people have been focusing on the problems in Europe, and that has been distracting attention from the problems in the United States. Now, also over the weekend, we had a positive development along the EU Constitution. Luxembourg, admittedly a much smaller country than France and the Netherlands, but Luxembourg nonetheless voted to approve the EU Constitution. So at least the dominoes have stopped falling. There is something that shows that, hey, you know, there are still some Europeans that think this is a good idea. And so maybe this will take some of the attention away from Europe. Maybe people will start thinking, hey, maybe there's some hope here. The whole thing isn't falling apart. So you've got, you know, a win for the EU Constitution, and you've got the fact that there seems to be a lot of action or a lot of attention on the trade numbers over the past few days. Even though today the dollar rallied on a trade deficit number, it rallied mainly because the trade deficit wasn't any worse than what people were looking for. But, you know, I've talked about this in the past, and it shows you, you know, how low the bar has been lowered, or the expectations. The fact that a $55 billion trade deficit can be reacted to as a positive for the dollar, because it wasn't $60 billion. $55 billion is a horrific number. It is an economic disaster. I mean, it is an F on a report card, you know, for a nation. I mean, I think it's an F minus. So what? Maybe $60 billion is an F minus minus. I mean, so we're supposed to be celebrating the fact that we got an F minus instead of an F minus minus. You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, this is ridiculous. But I mean, this is what's going on. You know, that we can look at these trade deficits. I mean, these numbers are. It doesn't matter. The numbers are so bad. $55 billion, $60 billion, $50 billion, $45 billion. They're all horrific, right? The dollar should be getting cremated regardless. It should just be going down every day because these numbers are big and they're only going to get worse. See, that's the problem. There's no sign. There's no sign anywhere that there's going to be a change. Right? They're just going to keep getting worse because, again, look at the jobs numbers that we just got, right? The jobs number showed fewer Americans in jobs in manufacturing, but more Americans employed. These Americans are going to spend their money. Where are they going to spend it? In China, in Japan, like everybody else. That means a bigger trade deficit. It's going to get worse. Also, you know, the housing bubble continues to inflate. What does the housing bubble do? The housing bubble creates additional purchasing power. How does it create purchasing power? Because of credit. As your house appreciates in value, Americans can go and access that appreciation through a home equity loan, through refinancing. And so Americans have greater purchasing power simply because some appraiser is willing to say their house is worth more than it was yesterday. Now, we're not producing any more goods, right? See, normally a purchasing power comes from your production. I mean, if you want to take it down to an individual level, suppose I'm a candlestick maker, and that's all I do is make candlesticks. And then I take those candlesticks and I barter them with other individuals for the things that they produce. Now, my consumption is restricted to the number of candlesticks that I can produce. The more candlesticks I can produce, the more goods I can buy because I have more candlesticks to exchange. So as I become more productive in the production of candlesticks, my purchasing power grows. Now, Americans are getting purchasing power simply because their houses are theoretically worth more. But Americans collectively are not producing any more products. So all that happens is when houses appreciate and Americans take cash out and spend it, they can only spend it in one place, and that's foreign. That's in China or someplace else that's making stuff. So as our real estate values continue to rise, we continue to get more purchasing power, which can only be spent internationally, which guarantees that the current account deficit keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then, of course, you know, things like oil. I mean, oil is a big part of our trade deficit. We import a lot of oil. I mean, oil prices have surged in the last month. You know, we're trading around $60 a barrel. All three of these factors are going to continue to exert pressure upwards on the trade, on the current account deficit. Meanwhile, our personal savings rate continues to shrink. You know, so there's no end in sight here. This situation is just going to keep on getting worse and worse. I don't know why anybody needs to wait for these numbers. I mean, we know that they're going to keep getting worse. What difference does it make? But, you know, this is, you know, one of the amazing things about our time. You know, and I've said this before, you know, this is an example of how the popular delusions of the madness of crowds. I mean, how people can believe such a completely nonsensical argument. I mean, how it's the same way that people believed in witches and burned them at the stake, or that people believed that you could get rich owning tulips. You know, I mean, obviously, stocks, you know, real estate aren't tulips, but, you know, neither were stocks. And we had a bubble there. You know, the bubble isn't a function of the asset. It's a function of the mentality of the people participating. It's people's greed, and it's people's foolishness. And it's the madness of crowds and the popular delusions. That's what enabled there to be a tulip mania. That's what enabled there to be a stock market mania. That's what enables a real estate mania. It's not the assets. It's the people. It's the mentality of the people that doesn't change. It doesn't matter what they're speculating on. It's just that they're speculating. And again, these are just microcosms of the much bigger bubble, which is the entire U.S. economy. An economy built on a phony premise that debt can accumulate forever and that we don't have to make anything, that we can continue to consume what everybody else produces, and they're going to be happy to supply us with those products, and that the whole world's well-being rests on their ability to satisfy the demands of Americans who do nothing to satisfy their own demands, nor do they make any effort to pay for what they consume with exporting. I mean, this is an amazing situation. And, you know, hopefully in the future people will, you know, will have records of these radio shows and will be able to listen to what I was saying, so at least they'll know that we weren't all a bunch of morons around the turn of the century here, that there were people that understood that this was nuts. Because I know when they do study about this period in, you know, in American history, and hopefully there is an America in the future, and we do have history classes, people are just not going to believe it. I mean, the students who are learning about this time period are going to just, you know, they're just going to say, ah, come on, you're making this up. Nobody could have been that stupid. Well, I got news for you. They are. We're experiencing it firsthand. Anyway, let's take one more break, and we'll come back for the last segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back. Only about 15 more minutes left in the program. If you want to call, please do so soon. The number to do is number to call is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. I know your Pacific clients who you guys should be getting your statements about now, or you should have gotten them a few days ago. Most of you will be very pleased to see the appreciation that we've had in the accounts over the last quarter. But also I put an insert in the statements basically requesting that people who don't have their email addresses with us go to our website or call us and give them the email address. We want to make sure we have a valid email address for as many of our clients as possible. We are hoping in the future to start communicating more often to clients, and we want to have a way to communicate efficiently, rapidly, and the best way to do that is email. So if we don't have your email address, you really want to get your email address to us. If you think we have your email address, but you haven't received any emails from us at all in the last couple of months, then we don't have your email address. Maybe we have it incorrectly, so give us a call so we can correct it in our files. Also, I am adding on the website, you should see it shortly, probably before the end of the week, a new section for upcoming public appearances. And right now, is what I have on there are the three money shows that I'm scheduled to do in Washington, D.C., in Orlando, and in San Francisco, and also the New Orleans conference on Halloween in October. And that is the only one that is a paid. The other ones, the money shows are free. The New Orleans conference is a paid event, but it's a great event. I haven't spoken at it in a while. It's the first time I've been there in a few years, and I plan to make it a regular stop. But if you haven't been to that conference, it's a great fun. It's a great city. There's a lot of really good people there. And you can come to our website, too, when that's up there, and you can sign up. And if you're going to sign up, definitely you want to let them know that you heard about it from Euro-Pacific Capital, because, you know, we pay money to exhibit there, but they're going to give us back some of the money based on the number of people who sign up. So you can help us defray the cost of exhibiting at that conference if you sign up at the New Orleans conference and you let them know. If you do it through our website or you call them and let them know that you heard about it from Peter Schiff or Euro-Pacific Capital. So that page will be on the site hopefully before the end of the week or maybe even as early as tomorrow, and I might put something on the front of the page that lets people know that there is a calendar of events. And then, you know, we might start doing, I'm going to start doing more radio shows, I mean other people's radio shows, and to the extent that I get booked, I might put up there, you know, what radio shows I'm going to be doing. We're hiring a PR person specifically to help get me on radio shows, and I think once we put that into the works, I might be on the radio several times a week. And so I'll try to put on the site the different stations that I'll be on around the country so people can, if you live in that area, so that you can tune in. But anyway, we have three calls. I wasn't expecting three people to call so quickly. So let me just go to those phones. We got the first call from John up in Canada. How you doing, John?
Hey, Peter. How's it going? I just wanted to make a comment about the manias and bubbles there real quick. It's really also a function of the easy money and credit provided by central banks and commercial banks. That's the most important thing. I mean, despite, you know, people's attitudes, they can't do it without the easy credit.
Yeah, I mean, certainly all bubbles, at least, I don't know if the tulip mania had to do with that, but I know that, you know, most financial bubbles that I've happened to witness have their roots in monetary policy. They have their roots in easy money and credit, which causes everybody to abandon all reason in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
So it distorts the economy and leads to foolish decisions.
Exactly.
You know, so, but at this point, you know, money supply is growing. I think it's taken on a life of its own because as houses appreciate, by definition, money supply grows because houses are purchasing power. The more your house is worth, the more you can buy. You can use your house to buy more houses.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, it's the fractional reserve banking system. That's all.
But when it bursts, this is the biggest bubble that we've probably ever experienced in the history of bubbles.
Yeah.
And it's going to burst with the most severe consequences.
Well, I was going to say about the trade deficit, just from pure theory, it's not a trade deficit per se that's the problem. That's the problem. The problem is that it's what you use to, like, on a micro level, like from just individual. If you borrow money and you use it to take a vacation, that's a problem. People usually, you borrow money, you know, to invest it and then you have a future flow of income.
Well, yeah. A trade deficit, I've mentioned this on the show many times, in America, you know, for the first couple hundred years of its existence, borrowed money from the world routinely. We borrowed it to build factories. We borrowed it to produce. We didn't borrow it to consume.
No, exactly. And the thing is that the dollar hasn't tanked because maybe people think that the current account deficit represents world savings going into the dollar for whatever investment. But
it represents world savings being flushed down the toilet.
That's exactly right. But it's not even world savings because it's basically central banks, destroying their own people's savings in order to prop up the dollar in U.S. government,
yeah,
which are not an investment. I don't care which.
Please, now you're living up there in Canada, so you might not have as much need for our services. But if you'd like to have some money invested,
No, I do because I get paid in U.S.
Well, we can still help you, although you're not as in dire straits as Americans.
No, that's true, but I do get paid in U.S. dollars. Like, I don't want to see my life savings evaporated too.
Paid in U.S. dollars?
Yeah, because I trade the New York Stock Exchange. And so I get paid everything I whatever money you can make these days in the market trading it, you get paid in U.S. dollars, obviously.
You can trade it in dollars, but then at the end of the night, put it back into Canadian dollars or something else before you go to bed.
No, right, but I don't get it every night, right? Like, I get it taken out every 6 weeks or whatever. So, like, you never know when these things can happen, and you have to have enough capital in there to have any kind of buying power.
Thanks for the call. We're running out of time. I got two callers on hold. All right, let's go to Pennsylvania to Harry.
Yeah, hi. I'm a client. I just recently bought some uranium funds and also China Power and Light and also some kind of bridge company. Can you give a little insight on those funds?
Well, I mean, I'm not really familiar with your particular account or the stocks in general. I generally don't talk about specific stocks on the radio. You just, you don't know as far as the people who are listening who's suitable and who isn't suitable. And I talk in general about broader concepts. And if anybody is interested in hearing about specific stocks and the stocks that we like and the reasons that we like them, they're free to call my office at 800-727-7922. But, we like the uranium story. It's more speculative. If you have any uranium investments through us, it's with risk capital. It's obviously something. But I think the supply and demand imbalances really favor uranium. And I think you're going to see more and more of the world turning to nuclear power. And I think there's a shortage of uranium. And I think that the uranium prices have a long way to go up. And I think anybody who wants to profit by that, who's willing to speculate, we've got some ideas. The other stocks that you have in China sound like they're more conservative. We have, most of what we're doing in China is the utilities and, the roads and things that pay good dividends and that are domestic demand. The key to being in China is you want domestic demand. You want to own companies that are going to benefit from an appreciating renminbi. Once they float that currency, you want to be in the companies that are going to benefit from that, not companies that potentially could be hurt by that, which would be companies that are heavy exporters to Walmart, for example, or something like that.
I needed to diversify, and I was into mostly oil and natural gas. And
so that's a good place to be, but obviously you don't want to have everything in oil and natural gas. So it doesn't make sense to have all your money in one particular area. But yeah, we do recommend a good weighting to oil and natural gas. But if you already had a lot of that before coming a client, naturally we might try to introduce you to some other investments that you didn't already have exposure to.
I bought those funds from your firm.
Yeah, great.
Right.
Good.
I've been a client for about 6 months now.
Oh, so you're relatively new. How did you hear about us?
Oh, over the short wave.
Oh, okay, great. So the
radio show, Raleigh James.
Well, good. I'm glad this is working. Tell your friends. We got to get more and more people listening before it's too late, so we can help as many people as possible.
Well, she talks about this economy as a house of cards, and I believe her.
Well, I mean, it literally is a house of cards because of the housing bubble.
Yeah, well, she's a syndicated talk show host. She's on XM satellite radio as well as.
Tell her she should call me up and have me on as a guest.
I'll get her email site and I'll.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the call.
Okay. Bye.
Now I think we have another Harry on the line from New Jersey. Go ahead, Harry.
Hi. How you doing? I just want to ask you a couple questions. I've been looking at confiscatory taxing against my property taxes is over 100% and the county equalization charge. But I want to ask you something. I've been looking into this, and I said, well, this is economic tyranny. It's really an economic dictatorship. I want to get your reaction to something like that with this fiat currency and how they. I see it as it just enslaved the people after a while.
Yeah, first of all, the whole concept of taxing property, if you go back to the Wealth of Nations and to Adam Smith, The type of property that the government should tax is income-producing property. If I have a piece of income-producing property, it's a factory or it's an apartment building or a shopping center, and I'm collecting rent. And if the government wants to tax that property based on the income that I'm generating, that makes sense. That's fine, because the property is generating income that I could use to pay the tax.
Right.
If I own a house, if I'm a retired and I've had some piece of property in my family for generations, and I'm not working, I don't have any income, but I own some property, and the government says, look, well, you ought to pay taxes every year, or we're going to take the property away from you.
Right.
Even own it. I mean, it's like the government owns it, and you're renting it from them.
Well, my taxes go up about $1,000 every year, which is insanity, really. And, I've been looking into this matter, and I said, this whole system is getting so crazy. But, the socialist system with the fiat currency, eventually, it just consumes everything. That's the way I see it.
What's going to happen in this sort of situation? I mean, America, we've set ourselves on a course, and there's only one way that this is going to end. And it's not a pretty ending.
What's your telephone number, Peter? I hate to be rude, but you have the number there?
Yeah, the number to call to talk to the brokers at Euro Pacific is 800-727-7922. 800-727-7922.
Okay.
And give us a call. We'll be more than happy to open up an account with you and help you out.
Peter, how do you feel about if I said to you, like, you pay 100% taxes on a no-cent dollar. Am I correct in my statement?
That what?
Like, if I say to you, you pay 100% taxes on a no-cent dollar, am I correct in that?
I'm not understanding your question. But anyway, if you want to ask it off the air or something, call, because we only have a couple minutes left on the program.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling, and if you're not a client yet, right?
Yeah, I'm a customer. Well, I'll be a customer.
Okay, great. We're looking forward to have you on board.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, I mean, this show, I mean, that's the purpose of this show. I mean, the reason I'm doing this show is to try to, actually, there's two reasons I'm doing this show. I'm doing this show to communicate with my existing clients, and I hope that, obviously, a number of people are listening to this every week, because that way they have an idea of what I'm thinking, and, I can't talk to, 5,000 people, 6,000 people individually every week, but I can certainly do an hour program, and hopefully a number of these clients are listening, and so they have an idea of what I'm thinking. But also, I want to spread the message. I want to get as many Americans as I can to understand what's going on, but more than just understanding it, to do something to protect their wealth. Because just knowing, what's going to happen and why doesn't do very much good if you don't use the information to preserve your wealth. I mean, what good is it to have known about the financial collapse and then gone bust with everybody else? I mean, where does that get you? I mean, what can you say? I saw it coming. But then if you say that, then your friends are going to say, but you didn't do anything. You're just as broke as I am. But what did you see? I mean, sure, after the fact. So what you've got to do is do something. You've got to get your money out of the dollar, and don't believe the propaganda. Don't believe the Ben Bernanke when, in his speech he said that the U.S. economy is sound, that we've got healthy economic growth, that there's no housing bubble. Whatever economy, whatever numbers this guy is looking at, they're not in the United States. Maybe somebody sent them China's economic numbers. But, I mean, this is pure propaganda, plain and simple. You've got to think for yourselves. You've got to look beyond this and understand that the government has a vested interest in lying to you. And why wouldn't they? It's not like there's just a bunch of, pure of heart politicians. I mean, politicians are prone to lying anyway. I mean, that's how they get elected. I mean, honest people aren't in politics. I mean, so it shouldn't be surprising to anybody that our elected officials lie to us when they're in office, because they certainly lie to get elected, and they lie to stay in office. But in any event, we're wrapping up the show here, so I thank everybody again for listening. Remember to go to our website at www.europac.net. Go to our other website, researchreport1.com, researchreport1.com, if you haven't been there, and download our research report on the collapsing dollar, the powerful case for investing in foreign equities, researchreport1.com. And visit us again next week. We'll be doing the radio show the same time every week, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Give us a call toll-free anytime, 800-727-7922. 800-727-7922. Again, this is Peter Schiff, President of Euro Pacific Capital, thanking you all for listening. So long.